Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Back here on Fantasy Sports Today, right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Kevin Walsh alongside George Kurtz bringing you an NFC East preview. Just went in depth on the Washington Redskins. And now we're going to turn it over to the New York Giants. And to help us with that is the man himself, Emery Hunt. You can find him on Twitter at FBallGamePlan. He's the founder and an analyst at FBallGamePlan. There's a lot here on the network. Emery, how's it going? Thanks for joining us.
I'm doing fine, man. I appreciate you guys having me on.
So the big thing for the Giants, I even mentioned to you yesterday, everyone wants to know Saquon Barkley. You've been at training camp first 2 days. I know you'll be back there again today. How's he look so far? I guess, you know, you got to take it with a grain of salt. But what have you seen from Saquon to start?
Just the next level of burst and explosiveness, something the Giants really haven't had in the backfield since Tiki Barber, quite honestly. So when you add that combined with the weapons they have around him and a rebuilt offensive line, you can get excited about the Giants' offensive attack this year.
Emery, I think the Giants' offense is going to be very good this year, maybe even more than very good with the weapons they have there. Let's talk about one of those weapons, Odell Beckham. I mean, we all know the contract. Do you think it gets hashed out? And I guess another question is, let's say it doesn't get hashed out, does Odell Beckham still stay in camp all August?
I think it does. Talking with Dave Gettleman yesterday, he was able to come back and speak with the media at the podium, and they kind of asked him about that in a roundabout way, and his answer was, contracts will get done when he's supposed to get done. So that was his take on it. Coach Pat Shurmur spoke about it a couple days ago and said he just want to keep everything on the field about football. But both really understand how valuable Odell Beckham is and how great of a player he is, and they will want to get the deal done. And from all intents and purposes, so does Odell. And just judging by what he's been able to do so far in practice, I mean, there's no ill effects of the injury. He's still explosive, still dynamic, still a playmaker as far as making one-handed catches and blowing past defenders. So all is good on the football front. I do think at some point during this summer, during this offseason, they'll get this deal done and get him signed up long-term.
Emery, you know, let me ask you then about Odell's decision to show up, because we're seeing a lot of people hold out right now, even a situation with Julio Jones that just got resolved, and that's a guy who's already gotten his money. And I think one of the reasons, at least for me, that I was curious is maybe Odell did this because he's kind of been in it with some off-field controversy. So do you think that Odell felt like this was actually the best way for him to get paid, where if he held out, it would have added to the controversy and he would have been less likely to get that contract? Do you think that's why we've seen Odell show up and report?
That could be a part of it. I also believe it's a perfect storm for the Giants because they have a coaching change. So with a coaching change comes a new offense, which means you kind of have to be here to really get it all in and really get the timing down. And plus, with the way they have this offense being broken down, guys are getting a lot of work at a lot of different positions. So it's not like he can come in knowing the offense, knowing where he's going to be, knowing what to expect. He's learning new things and still is learning new things within his offense being moved around a lot. So it kind of played into the Giants' favor to where Odell sort of had to be here. And hopefully it works out for both parties involved.
Are there going to be enough bulls to go around here? I mean, you got Odell Beckham, you got Sterling Shepard, Evan Ingram, I think he's going to have a fantastic season as well. And they're going to run the ball a whole lot. Are they going to be, are Giants going to throw the ball enough to make everybody happy?
You know, it's interesting because I was asked this question yesterday on Twitter, and I think, or maybe today from Fantasy Sports on Dane Spittin' Speeds, he asked whether or not they were going to have a lot of balls to go around. But I think a lot has been made about Saquon Barkley's contribution to the passing game. Now, don't get me wrong. He'll be, you know, your dump off guy, your screen guy, things like that. But I do think because they have the talent they have on the perimeter, they don't have to really throw him the football like that. It's a nice to have, not a need to have in this offense. And I think that's going to be the difference. I do think he's going to have his value will be tied directly to his ability to run the football. And because of that, it's going to help the offense out. Everybody else is going to get their targets, get what they're supposed to get. And I think that's going to really open up the offense. So I would say there's enough balls to go around for the receivers. Don't count too much on Saquon Barkley. I think Saquon Barkley in this passing offense will finish fourth as far as receiving is concerned.
Well, let me ask you, right, because a lot of that should come down to scheme, I think, as well. And Pat Shurmur, maybe he's the biggest offseason addition, really, when you think about the impact that he can have in terms of the New York Giants replacing Ben McAdoo, which can only be an upgrade, because what a mess that was last season. From being at training camp, what is the vibe that you get from Shurmur and how he is relating with these players and how things are kind of looking out there within the first couple of days?
I have to be completely honest, man. This is one of the first football practices I've been in and been around, you know, playing college football, so I'm counting all that in, to where you don't hear screaming from coaches. Like, I find it utterly amazing. There's a lot of instruction going on, and, you know, if guys make a mistake, they're coaching them up right there, and it's a refreshing thing to see because, again, these are professional players. These are grown men. You know, you don't have to really scream at guys like they're high school teenagers. Hey, man, here's what you mess up. Here's what you got to do next time to get better. And guys are actually responding to that form of coaching rather than, you know, the old-fashioned scream at you until you get it right type deal. But this is the first practice I've been around, and it wasn't a one-time thing. This will be my third practice. So the last two times I've been here, counting the rookie mini camps as well, you don't hear a lot of screaming. You hear a lot of coaching going on. Guys are flying around. Guys are making plays. Players are also coaching other players. So this seems more along the lines of a professional atmosphere and a productive one at that.
Emery, I think the Giants finishing 3-13 last year was really a mirage. Things have snowballed. I think they're a much better team than that. But no matter what we think, it all goes down to the offensive line. Have they done enough in free agency and the draft, which they added players in both, to give Eli time to throw, to open up holes for Saquon Barkley? How's that offensive line going to be?
You know what? On paper, you have to say that they have, because, again, until we get the pads on, until they get to go against other competition, we still have to wait and see. But as far as what they've done on paper, absolutely they've done enough, because you have Will Hernandez coming in, you have Nate Solder, you signed him. And you have some guys coming back that were really good players coming back from injury, and they move Eric Flowers to the right side. So, you know, they've done enough, I think, to help offset some of the issues they had last year, in addition to the pieces that they've added. Here's what part people don't understand. When you add a game breaker in the backfield at running back, you can kind of, you know, his talent supersedes an average offensive line, so to speak. So him being back there is going to make that offensive line look a hell of a lot better. Mm. And I think because of that, in addition to the talent that they've added up front, yeah, this offensive line will look a lot better. I think the biggest question will be, can Eli, not be a 37-year-old version of Eli Manning and be a guy that we saw maybe 3 years ago? You know, if that's the case, then, you know, it's going to be just fine. I think Eli now, quite honestly, has become, you know, the biggest question mark on this offense because of his age.
So we're here right now with Emery Hunt. You can find him on Twitter at FBallGamePlan. He is the founder and an analyst at Football Game Plan. So let's just take it right there then, Emery. You mentioned it. Eli Manning is the biggest question mark here. In fantasy circles, people are saying, if we're going to take Saquon and Odell in the first round, if we're all excited about Shepard and Evan Ingram's a top five tight end, then don't we need to get in on Eli Manning? And if we're not going to get in on Eli Manning, then maybe we need to lower how we rank the rest of these guys. So, Emery, your feelings on Eli Manning, we've already heard best shape of my life stuff from him.
Well, you know, it's funny. I thought last year he was in the best shape of his life. Looked, you know, lean. He looked mobile during mini camps and training camp. And, you know, you still see the same things with Eli here. He doesn't really have the strongest of arms, But, you know, I saw yesterday that he was a little bit more aggressive in pushing the ball vertically down the field. I will say this. Eli, on average, is, what, about a 28-touchdown, 14-interception guy. So, but he can throw over 4,000 yards. So I think when you look at from a yards perspective as far as fantasy is concerned, yeah, they're going to be evenly distributed. A guy's going to get their yards. Touchdowns is where I'm mostly worried about Eli, because I do think you may not see the double-digit touchdown receiver in this offense. Guys may have 8, 6, and 9 or something like that, with, you know, Saquon maybe getting 4 or 5 as a receiver. So I think the touchdowns will be dispersed, but the yards will be there in bunches. You just hope that the interceptions are down. You just hope that Eli has a year where he's throwing 33 touchdowns to 9 interceptions. When on average, like I said, he's had 14 interceptions even in his peak years. The last 3 seasons prior to last year was, what, 28 touchdowns, 30 touchdowns, but still 14, 16, 13 interceptions. So we'll see. The interceptions have to be cut in half, but I think that's pretty consistent. But if he can increase that touchdown production, then that means this team as a whole will be playing in the playoffs.
Do you think the Giants, I mean, when the Cowboys drafted Ezekiel Elliott, and even with DeMarco Murray, they used those players to keep the defense off the field because the defense was poor, control the clock. Do you see the Giants going with the same sort of philosophy of trying to eat up 34, 35 minutes of clock time to keep their defense off the field? Is it the same as what Dallas has been done and will be doing again this year?
Yeah, I think it's the same philosophy, and it's a good one because, again, you can't score unless you have the ball, right? And I think when you look at complementary offense, you see it in college football, you see it in the pros, it's a winning formula. And by keeping your defense fresh, keeping these guys active, especially when you are planning to have an aggressive attack style defense where you're bringing pressure nonstop, you want those guys to be fresh when you need it the most. So being able to run the football, now it won't be a lot of I formation, fullback and H-back leading in the hole and Saquon Barkley running behind them. The other side of that is that if you score touchdowns, which they have the potential to do a lot of because of the playmakers they have on offense, you still put the opposing offense in a bind to press and try to keep up the pace. Let's take it back to it. And I'm not saying the Giants are the same way, but the greatest show on turf, the St. Louis Rams that year in 99, when they were number one offense, their defense, quite honestly, was 15th or 16th in the league because teams was pressing offensively to try to keep pace. So if your offense can score in bunches, you're going to help out your defense because teams will be one-dimensional. But if you can control the clock and then end the drive with points, whether that's 3 or 7, you give your defense rest, you get time to get adjusted on the sideline, and your defense could be a little bit more active and a little bit more direct in their approach as far as how to take away what the opposing offense is trying to do.
Well, Emery, what is your outlook for this Giants defense? 2 years ago when the Giants were a playoff team, the defense was the lifeblood of this team. And I think last year, McAdoo was so incredible in creating a disaster that as an offensive head coach, he really, I think, messed up the defense, the random one-game suspensions that he would go through. But I look now to this roster, and it's not as good as the defense that they had 2 years ago. They still do have some big names in the secondary with Collins and Janoris Jenkins. They still got Snacks Harrison and Olivier Vernon on the front, and they've brought in Alec Ogletree, but maybe I'm wrong here. This does not feel like a defense that is poised to finish top 10, certainly not top 5. What's the feeling you get from the defense at the moment?
I think the pressure is going to be good. I think they're going to be able to stop the run. Snacks is a really good run defender and also a guy that just creates pressure by himself. So they're good there. Olivier Vernon is a really good pass rusher that's going to be asked to do that, significantly in this defense. And Lorenzo Carter, the drafted rookie out of Georgia, the linebacker, is a very strong run defender. The question I have about the Giants, I believe the secondary isn't as deep as we once seen it. You know, when they had Eli Apple, they also had Janoris Jenkins. You had DRC, who's a versatile guy that could play on the outside, could play in the slot, could play safety. They don't have that guy yet, and it took a lot of pressure. Now, I do think the safety position is a little bit deeper than the cornerback position because Darian Thompson is going to have a breakout year, I believe. Landon Collins is a Pro Bowl player, a potential All-Pro player. But the cornerback depth is going to be what to be watching throughout the entirety of training camp and in the preseason. If they can get deeper in the secondary and find a well-established nickel corner, a dime corner, a guy that can be a blitzer off the edge, something that's unique, I think they'll be fine.
Anyway, do we have a surprise player on this team? It could be offense or defense. A guy who's going to outperform what people think they are going to do.
I think offensively, the biggest – everyone's talking about Sterling Shepard. I think that's a good one. He's going to have the breakout year. But a surprise is Amba Edetowo, the receiver out of Syracuse, who came over via free agency. This is a guy that has been having a heck of a camp. Taller receiver, explosive first step, and able to track the ball well. He was a guy that was a standout at Syracuse, also in the Senior Bowl, and bounced around. Now he's on his second team, I believe, with the Giants, and is having a real good camp. Now, defensively, I would say when you look at the linebacker position, B.J. Goodson on the inside playing in this 3-4 defense is going to have a phenomenal year. And also, like I said before, Darian Thompson, underrated guy, people forgot about him, but he's a ball hawk. He's been injured the last two seasons as far as nagging injuries. Now you get him a full bill of health, playing that true center field position in conjunction with the front seven getting pressure because of the 3-4 defense. He should have a lot of interceptions.
Emory, we got just about 30 seconds left, so before you go, I want to ask you your outlook for this Giants team. Do you think that they are going to get back to the playoffs? Obviously, things can change, but as of today, do you see the Giants getting back to the postseason?
I think the defense is, the division is tougher. I see the Giants finishing around 7-9, 8-8, with 2019 adding a few more pieces on defense being the breakthrough. But right now, the division is just too strong. Keep an eye on Washington. I think Washington could be a surprise in the NFC East.
Interesting. Now I'm here in Washington for a couple of people. Corey mentioned the other day. Now, Emory, we just went through the Redskins. NFC East is going to be interesting. Emory, thank you so much for joining us. You can find him on Twitter at FBallGamePlan. Great follow. Make sure you follow Emory Hunt there. We come back. George and I are going to continue talking about the New York Football Giants. Keep it here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things, just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
And we are back here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Kevin Walsh alongside George Kurtz here on Fantasy Sports Today. Great stuff there from Emory talking about the New York Giants. He said, right, he feels like they could be a 500 team. I think that is fair. I think there's a lot of different ways that this can play out for them. The defense probably not as good as it once was. The offense should be better, but so much of that tied to Eli. No, George?
Yeah, I agree. I think you could pretty much put 8-8 for every team in this division outside of Philadelphia. You mentioned Eli. Now, I've said it over and over again. There's no way at draft time, the NFL draft, that I would have taken Saquon Barkley. Not because he wasn't the best player available. He was. He was probably the best player in the draft. But I think in today's NFL, with an aging quarterback and Eli's 37, you can't pass up on a possible franchise quarterback. So the only way I would have done that if I was Gettleman is if I didn't believe that any of these other quarterbacks, Sam Darnold, Rosen, Allen, Mayfield, any of these, Lamar Jackson, all these guys, Mayfield was already gone, so that didn't matter. But if I truly believe they aren't franchise quarterbacks, then fine, you grab Barkley. Because in my mind, this is short term. Yes, Barkley makes him a better team this season, no doubt. This season, maybe next year too. But what are you going to do in 2 years from now when Eli's done and you don't have a quarterback? I think long-term, you hurt the future of the organization. Running backs are nice. And if this is the 80s and 90s, they may mean more. In today's NFL, they don't. You need to have a quarterback. All the rules are designed for a quarterback. So it really all does come down to Eli Manning. I think, like I said, Barkley, drafting him makes them a better team this year. because there's no doubt, you know, if you had, if they took Sam Darnold, they wouldn't be anywhere in this consideration to be a 4-6 win team. Yeah. By taking Barkley, keeping Eli, you are double that, 8, maybe 9 wins. But I think it was a mistake in the end not to take a franchise quarterback, unless you truly believed. Like I said, if Gettleman truly believed, which I have a hard time believing, that none of these guys were a franchise quarterback, then I don't have an issue with it. But other than that, the Giants aren't going to finish 3-13 again. And maybe years before they do that, they're not going to get a chance to draft that, be that high in the draft without, you know, making other trades and trading whatever. To be that high to grab a franchise quarterback, it's just so tough to pass that up. I don't think I could have done it.
Yeah, I mean, look, 5 quarterbacks went in the first round. Okay, Dave Gettleman, there's no way that he was like, no, I don't like any of these guys. That's just, that is nonsense. He likes Saquon, so be it. I agree with you. They did not set themselves up likely for long-term success, but it's all about this year for this team. And whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, we'll see. They do have a young core. The reason why it's all about this year is their quarterback is 58 years old, at least, with Eli Manning. I want to just go through, again, you know, the position by position. We'll get back to where Eli is ranked, because I think where these skill guys is ranked, it kind of then can tie in to perhaps some value. Right now, PPR, Saquon Barkley is the 6th running back off the board, right behind Alvin Kamara, the big 4, of course, going, you know, well ahead of him. Right behind him, Kareem Hunt, Melvin Gordon, Leonard Fournette, and Dalvin Cook. That rounds out your top 10. Saquon is a rookie, but he's really, really talented. How do you feel about, you know, Saquon Barkley being one of the first 5, you know, 6 running backs drafted within fantasy right now?
Well, remember that draft I just told you I did in Vegas?
Sure.
I had the 5th overall pick. Standard Ooh. League. Ooh. Standard league.
Okay.
Whatever reason they... I'm not a PPR, but anyway.
I hear the disdain in your voice for that being standard scoring. That is wonderful.
Yeah, I am... I'm anti-Jake Sealy there. I want more leagues to go PP1, which is point per first down, not reception. Mm. I think that's more important. I never really talked to Jake about why he disdains PPR, but I think it's because I throw a pass to Kevin Walsh. Kevin catches it, but he loses 3 yards. Why is he getting a point for that?
Yeah. I think half point might be the way to go in the future, but...
It might be. It might be a good compromise there. But PP1... When is a first down not important?
That's fair.
Yeah, you can't argue that. So I'd like to see more of these do PP1s, which the Scott Fishbowl did last year. I thought that was actually fantastic. But anyway, I had the 5th pick. The top 4 went the way you think it was. I don't remember the order, but, you know, the Bell, Gurley, Elliott, Johnson. And 5th pick, I took Barkley. It wasn't even a hesitation to me. You know, if it would have been PPR, we could have discussed Kamara being there. Mm. You know, and I might have gone that direction. 5th pick, I think Barkley's going to have a fantastic season. We know he's a touchdown guy for the Giants. I think he is going to be the main back there. I mean, there's a reason they drafted him number 2 overall. Right. As you and I just discussed, this was a short-sighted move for me, which means they're playing to win now. They're going to use Barkley. You know, they want to win now while Eli's still capable of throwing the football, and they'll worry about, you know, 2020 and 2020. I like Barkley a lot this year.
And I just get sidetracked for just a quick moment. One of the things I have found interesting at the top of drafts is that Antonio Brown now. You can kind of get him at 6-7. I know this is standard, so you have to probably take one of these running backs. But do you feel like we're maybe getting a little bit of value on the guy that is always the best wide receiver in Antonio Brown? Or do you think that this makes sense because these top running backs are so valuable that you'll just take, you know, AJ Green, whatever it is, round 2, and you don't want to take AB within maybe the first 7 picks?
Listen, if this was a PPR or a PP half, and Brown was there at 5, I don't know if I could have passed it up.
Yeah.
In some ways, he's the safest player.
You know, I agree.
He passes. That's the... Right? That Steelers offense is still damn good. Now you got Schuster on the other side, too, a player I like as well. You know, Bell, yes, he's not going to be there until probably the Monday before the first game starts, or the Tuesday, whatever it is. So that's annoying, but he's going to be there. So defense is going to have to account for him. I don't know, because I love Antonio Brown. I don't think I could have passed up on him at 5. I probably would have grabbed him, but it does come back to, boy, if you don't grab a running back early,
yeah,
you're going to be screwed. Because I had the 5th overall pick, 12-team league. You do the math. That's what, now I pick 18th. So I go again at 13, 14 picks. There'll be no running backs there. No top guys. I might have to take that shot at LeSean McCoy, you know, or Jerick McKinnon if you want to believe in him. Now you go with all the running backs. Devonta Freeman missed a concussion. All the running backs that have, you know, major warts here, that there's a reason they're falling this low. So that's why it's so hard to pass up a top running back in the first round should you have a chance.
Yeah. Now, it's a bit of a sidetrack, but it's something that I saw Corey mention one day. And I was like, man, that's a really good point. Like, Antonio Brown is, like, you're getting him at 7. And, like, I get it, but it is an interesting thing. Now, for the Giants, one of the things, though, that is grabbing my attention a little bit, George, maybe it's a little underrated. They added Nate Solder. They drafted Willie Hernandez. That's wonderful. They did lose last year's starting center and right guard in Weston Richburg and Justin Pugh. So I wonder, maybe not cancel each other out, but I wonder how much better the offense is because they still lost two starters from the offensive line. Do you think that that's overlooked, or do you feel like Hernandez plus Solder is enough to justify not worrying about the offensive line?
Oh, I think you make a very, extremely valid point. I mean, are they better? Sure. But it's not like, oh, we got two new stars. You know, we got Hernandez, we got Solder. We're immensely better. No. You lose a center, that hurts. Outside of your left tackle, your center is probably the next, it is the next most important part. And some will argue it's the most important part of your offensive line. He makes the calls. You know, he makes the calls about what protection you're going into. So, you know, it's interesting there. So, yeah, I think it's better. It's better. I'm not going to say it's not, but I don't think it's exponentially better. No, it's just better. Yeah. You know, and then you could also make an argument, well, that's not saying much. Last year it sucked. You know, and it did. You know, that's why I asked Emery the question. How the offensive line, listen, in most teams, you know, we all love the running backs, the wide receivers, you know, the skill position, the quarterback, but it's the offensive line and the defensive line that will determine your success. You know, if one's terrible, well, you know, if your offensive line's terrible, you can't really run the ball, can't pass the ball, don't have enough time. If your defensive line's terrible, well, your offense is never getting the ball. The other team's just controlling the game. So it's intriguing. I think the Giants' offensive line is better. Nate Solder probably, at the very least, gives Eli Manning a little bit more comfort. But I also wonder, at 37 years of age, playing this long, I think he sees the rush. I think he feels the rush. And that's generally not a good thing for a quarterback. And I don't know if you can get that out of your system at this point in your career. I think he's been hit so many times, it's just there. And I don't think he can get past that. So I think he's still going to see the rush and feel the rush and make some mistakes. Will Hernandez is a nasty man, which is great for an offensive lineman. Now, you want him to be that, but still a rookie. He's going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, so I still have worries about this offensive line, Kev. I do. But I think it's better. So I'm not letting it scare me as far as Barkley is concerned or Odell Beckham. My biggest worry is what I asked, Kevin. I do wonder, if the Giants go with the Cowboy philosophy of controlling the clock, you know, then, man, is there really enough balls to go around here? Beckham's going to be Beckham. Not worried about him. But as far as Shepard and Ingram, you know, unless Eli's throwing the ball, you know, after Beckham, his next read's Ingram always. You know, if he splits it between those two, then we may not get the big season we want out of these guys. You know, we may not be able to get there because there just won't be enough time or balls to go around to make everybody happy here. This Giants offensive line, a Giants offense could be explosive, but it depends on what kind of system they're going to run. It's why I think it's so important. Are they going with the Cowboys' philosophy? Run, 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 control the clock, keep the defense off the field. If you do that, the passing game gets limited. I think it's better for the NFL. I think it's better for the Giants to do that. You know, you keep that defense off the field, keep Eli from throwing the ball left and right, but it'll hurt their fantasy numbers.
I think that is, it's a valid point. I think, you know, in part, you know, keeping the defense off the field can be key because I just said it, you know, when we were talking to Emery, I don't know if this defense is as good as it once was. But I also don't know how many times I want Eli Manning throwing the ball. Last four seasons, since 2014, Eli Manning, 601 attempts, 618 attempts, 598 attempts, and threw 571 last year. And keep in mind, he did miss a game. So pretty much 600 attempts, four straight years for Eli Manning on average. That is not a number that this team should be aiming for. Now, if it comes down to the 500 feels like a massive drop, but I mean, that's, I'd like to aim somewhere closer to 500 than 600. So I think that that's a fair point. And I don't really worry again much about Odell, but maybe it is the other guys. You know, he made one point, Emery did, about maybe Saquon won't be involved in the passing game as much as we think. I personally would disagree with that because I think that that was one of the main selling points of Saquon Barkley, is what he can do in the passing game, is what he can provide after the catch. So I would slightly disagree with that, but is that maybe, you know, perhaps a concern then with the overall numbers is you can't have Eli Manning throwing the ball 600 times again, can you?
Well, yeah, you do a simple math here. 16 times 30, 30 passes a game, that's 480 attempts. Okay. That's really, you said, you want to get him closer to 500? I agree with you. Even give him 32 attempts, now he's just a little over 500. That's about right. And that probably means the Giants are having success. Because if he's throwing the ball 600 times again, well, it probably means you're trailing an awful lot.
Yeah.
You're not able to run the ball. You know, as far as Barkley in the passing game, I mean, think of Ezekiel Elliott, the Cowboys. They don't use him in the passing game a lot. You know, they do, but they don't. And the reason is not because he can't catch the ball. He can, but he's also a very good blocker.
Yes.
So he stays in the block, pick up the blitz. The same thing could be true of Barkley. If he ends up being a very good blocker, then he may have to stay in and block at times, especially if we're worried about this offensive line. If they're getting pressure on him, then someone's got to stay in and block. If you don't want it to be Engram, you know, then it's really got to be Barkley in there. Someone's got to pick up the blitz there. So you wonder if that plays a part in this as well. You know, if you don't want to take him off the field there. So it's just something to remember here. Listen, fantasy-wise, this shouldn't bother anybody at all. You know, you're still taking Barkley 5, 6, first round, whatever it might be. You're not worried about he's going to catch, you know, 40 passes or 32. You know, he's going to be extremely valuable there. But if you're quite, oh, why am I seeing him catch passes left and right? This could be one of the reasons why, if he's good at blocking, someone's got to help protect Eli.
The big question, I mean, not the big question, I think one of the big maybe exclamation points, if we're going to use the different things there, is Evan Engram, right? Year two was really, really good last year for an offense that was tough to watch at times. And you know, we just kind of made this point about could they be throwing the football a little bit less. Do you think that Evan Engram maybe last year was a product of, I mean, look, if they're going to lower the attempts, that's one thing. But Evan Engram was the only guy last year. Odell out for the year pretty much after, I think it was week three. Brandon Marshall never ended up being anything for this team and then was out for the year. Shepard missed time. So do you think maybe Evan Engram's production could have just been a product of what was there and maybe we're overrating Engram a little bit?
Well, you can't argue that it's the facts. Facts are facts, right? I mean, there was no one left for the Giants. They all got hurt. All right, Beckham was out. Marshall was out. I think even Roger Lewis got hurt. I mean, they were all out. Yeah. So there was nothing left for him to throw to. So England was going to get over targets. That being said, the defense knew that too, and they still had troubles covering.
True.
So I believe in Engram. I think he is a top five tight end. I wouldn't take him ahead of obviously not Gronk or Kelsey or Zach Ertz, but anywhere after that, I'm good. I'm really good with that. I think once again, I do worry that there won't be enough bulls to go around. But I think this affects more Shepard than Engram or Beckham or even Barkley, if you want to go that far. I think it affects Shepard because I think he could be the number three on the target list, maybe even number four if Barkley is out there as well. So he's the guy I'm worried about, not Engram. I think Engram is the real deal. That being said, you know, in my first two live drafts, I took Engram. You know, I liked where his value was. I took him. In the last one, I decided he was available again, and I was debating between him and Olsen. And although I like him better and I have him ranked higher, I just decided to diversify a little bit. Let me cover myself in case, you know, I am wrong here. So I went with Olsen over Engram. But overall rankings, I think Engram's going to be, I think he's very, very good. And I think he's only going to get better.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I just want to say on the Odell point, like last year, he was tied for second on this team in touchdowns, fourth in yard. Now, part of that is what was there and how they struggled. But he is that good. He played four games. The first game was really tough for him, only four catches, 36 yards. Next game, plays the Eagles. We know how good the Eagles' defense was last year. 9 catches, 79 yards, 2 touchdowns. Tampa, 7 catches, 90 yards. And then his last game was against the Chargers. 5 grabs, 97 yards, and a touchdown. Don't have questions about Odell Beckham. He's going to be fine. Like, there are spots where you're getting him in the second round. Jump on that. He's going to be wonderful. I do think, George, we're coming up close here against the Braves. Not much time to discuss, but I do think one of the big tests can kind of be how people project week one. They host the Jaguars. And maybe you could say something about Jacksonville, but we're looking at a team that has, I would say, top 10 offense potential against what was one of the three best defenses in all of football last year. How nervous would you be about some of your starters, Ingram, Shepard, Odell, Saquon, going up against the Jaguars in a matchup week one?
Well, you're not thrilled about it, right? That's Jalen Ramsey. Odds are going to be living on you. So that's tough. I mean, but I don't get old with the schedules. I mean, great. You know they're playing Jacksonville. The NFC East is playing the NFC South, the AFC South.
Yeah. So
you know that's coming up. At least you get it out of the way right away, right? At least not during the playoff chase in Week 11 or Week 12 when you really need to win the game there. So I'm not going to panic about it all that much. It's annoying. I realize it might be a tough Week 1 for me, but such is life. I'm still taking them.
Such is life. We come back. Dallas Cowboys, seeing if they can get back to the playoffs. We'll discuss right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network next. Keep it locked.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
We are back here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Kevin Walsh alongside George Kurtz on Fantasy Sports Today, doing a big NFC East preview. Already went through with the Washington Redskins, just did the New York Giants. We're going to go to the Dallas Cowboys. But before we do that, I want to let you know that we're giving away more World Series tickets on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. This time, it's to the winner of a free DFS baseball contest. The contests are sponsored by DKMS, who are looking for your help in the fight against blood cancer. For many patients, a bone marrow transplant is the best chance for survival. While 30% of patients can find a matching donor in their families, 70%, which is nearly 14,000 people each year, must rely on a benevolent stranger to step up and donate. You can find out how you can help the cause and win 2018 World Series tickets playing free daily fantasy baseball by going to dailyroto.com/DKMS. That is dailyroto.com/DKMS. Your tickets to the World Series and someone's ticket to life. So check that out. Please do. So we're talking about the Dallas Cowboys. A lot of stuff there. George, during the break, I was just looking through something. Ezekiel Elliott has had 100 total yards or a touchdown in every single game in his career but one. He's had 100 total rushing yards or a touchdown in every single game in his career but three. Now, two of those was a 97-yard performance and another 97-yard performance. So really, in his career thus far, 22 game or 26 games played, I believe it is, for Zeke, 25 games. He has had one bad game. Week 2 last year against the Broncos, 9 carries, 8 yards. That was really, really tough. Zeke is maybe week to week the guy that you could trust the absolute most. He is in that big four grouping with Lev Bell, Todd Gurley, and David Johnson. Now, those three are projected to catch more passes, have more receiving yards, and likely more receiving touchdowns. But right now, I think if we're projecting, Zeke has to be the favorite to lead the NFL in rushing yards and likely rushing touchdowns.
Hard to argue with that. I don't know about the rushing touchdowns part, but I mean, listen, the Cowboys, they don't have much on the outside. They're gonna run the ball left, run the ball right, Run the ball up the middle. That's the entire offense. The offensive line, assuming it stays healthy, should be immensely better than last year. Tyron Smith was out for a bunch of games last year. They drafted, was it Connor? I think it's Connor Williams offhand, who's supposedly looked great, and that he should help the line there. The problem is going to be this. I mean, you're a defensive coordinator. I'm a defensive coordinator. How are you stopping Dallas? You're going to put 8 men in the box. Nine guys in the box. Until Dak can prove he could beat you on the outside with Hearns, Beasley, Terrence Williams, I mean, Michael Gallup, the rookie. Until one of those guys steps up and proves they can beat, you know, the cornerback on the outside, teams are going to load up on that box. It's going to be smash mouth football. Old-time football is really what it's going to be. 70s and 80s football. It's what you're going to see here in Dallas. Maybe getting rid of Dez does help Dak's confidence. You know, that seems to be the big reason why he was released. You know, that I guess Dez was not the influence the Cowboys wanted to see on Dak, I guess, with his yelling, screaming, da-da-da-da, whatever. So now, I mean, it's just tough for me to see this, Kev, because over and over again, all I can think of is if I'm a defensive coordinator, everybody and their mother is on the line of scrimmage.
Yeah. So I was thinking about this this Dallas team, right? And 2016 was amazing for them. Zeke and Dak's rookie years, 13 games. They had the best record in the NFC. They might have been tied for the best record in all of football that year. Again, they had the number one seed in the NFC. And, I mean, they were amazing, the two of them. They really were. And now we're talking about Dallas, I know, right? Because the receiving corps is so terrible. Well, if I can play devil's advocate, Cole Beasley and Terrence Williams are still there. Okay, yippee, right? They're still there. But they contributed to a degree in that 2016 season. The other guys that have left since that point, right, would be Dez and Jason Witten. And I want their replacements are Allen Hurns and you said Swaim. Some people have said it could be Dalton Schultz. I don't know. With the tight end spot, it'll be difficult. We'll talk about that. But I wonder if maybe the receiving core in 2016 wasn't that good anyway. So maybe it doesn't matter as long as this offensive line is chugging along healthy and they have Ezekiel Elliott. Could that be possible?
Sure. I mean, anything's possible. One thing about, I guess if you're looking for the good news, all right, once again, if you're looking for the good news about not having Witten, not having Dez, well, you should be a faster team.
That's true.
You know, Dez, he lost a step or two, right? He just did. With all leg injuries, knee injuries, he's lost a step or two. Jason Witten, he's a Hall of Fame tight end, great tight end, but he was really slow as dirt. So that should help there. So I guess I could look at it that way. But you're also losing a fantastic blocker in Jason Witten. You know, maybe Swaim, Jarwin, Schultz, Gathers, whoever starts a tight end there. Maybe they end up being a good blocker as well. But Witten was a good blocker. He was a sixth member of the offensive line. He would block. He was willing to do it. So that's just got to hurt there. I think the biggest problem is this. Which one of these guys steps up to make the safety play high, to keep the safety off the line of scrimmage, to make defenses respect the passing game? That's the problem here. And right now, they're not going to respect that passing game until Dallas proves it. I mean, maybe they prove it right away. You know, Kearns catches a 64-yard touchdown pass in game one, blows by everybody, and that makes people back up. But what if he doesn't? You know, Beasley, they say they're going to have him on the outside more, running normal routes rather than a slot receiver. Believe that when I see it. You know, Dallas has had issues. One thing about those comments, those tweets that Dez Bryant said last night, which, by the way, if anybody wants to follow Dez Bryant, he torched Dallas. A lot of it was BS. You know, he's mad at Sean Lee, mad at Travis Frederick. He thinks they got him kicked off the team. That's BS. But one thing he was absolutely right about, Dallas never moved him. God forbid they should have put him in motion. You know, God forbid they should have put him in the slot. They never did. Their offense was very unimaginative. Very unimaginative. You know, and I think that did hurt Dez. I absolutely believe that. You know, I think it's something we've discussed before. That you move a player around, it makes the defense, A, it makes the defense show what they're doing. And then, B, it gives them a chance to get better matchups. Dallas didn't do that. At least very rarely did that. Maybe they'll do that more this year. You know, I said moving Beasley to the outside would be intriguing, but he's also 120 pounds soaking wet. So he's going to have some issues there as well. Tavon Austin, are they going to line him up in the backfield? No, they're not, because that's going to be Ezekiel Elliott territory. So maybe they'll line up him in the slot. The player to watch, in my mind, is probably Gallup, the third-round rookie. I think he could develop into something, but you're probably looking more of a dynasty league here than a player of 2018.
The ADPs for the Dallas wide receivers are not kind. The highest that you could get is Allen Hurns. He's at 46. Then comes Michael Gallup. He is at 58. Then the next one is at 85, Cole Beasley. Tavon Austin is at 96, and Terrence Williams is at 100. So there are two ADPs that would jump out to me there. Perhaps there could be some legitimate value. The first has to be Allen Hurns. 46th wide receiver off the board. Look at the guys he's surrounded by. First three in front of him. You've got Sterling Shepard, 43, Aguilar, 44, Kelvin Benjamin, 45. And what should be different from Allen Hurns and compared to those guys, Shepard and Aguilar are not number one wide receivers on their teams. They both might be the number three option on their team. And Allen Hurns has to be considered in a better situation than what Kelvin Benjamin is in. So at 46, maybe that is a legit value there if you're going to get the guy that could lead Dallas in targets.
I would agree. Hearn is someone I'm looking to grab late because his value, no one's taking him. No one wants to touch him. But listen, as a wide receiver 4, wide receiver 5, we all have guys like this. Another player to look at. I mean, I mentioned Beasley. In a PPR league, if you want to see the guy who might lead the Cowboys in receptions, not touchdowns, but receptions, it's probably Beasley. You know, because they say they're going to line up on the outside some. He's going to line up on the slot more often than not. And so that'll be close to the line. That'll be what he does. He'll catch those passes. Touchdowns are going to be few and far between. That'll be Hurns. You know, really. But I think I wouldn't shock me if Beasley ends up catching 60 passes, 800 yards, you know, 3-4 touchdowns. You know, Hurns, I think, will catch less passes, but have more touchdowns. Matter of fact, Hurns wouldn't shock me at all if he gets 8 to 10 touchdowns. As silly as that sounds, someone has to catch them. Dak's not throwing 4 touchdown passes all year, and he could be the guy with Ezekiel Elliott running the ball that gets those one-on-one matchups inside the 10-yard line. He catches the ball. Wouldn't shock me at all if he's that guy. You know, the bottom line is this, though. Neither one has immense upside. I think that's where I'm going with here, where their ADP is about right. You mean, Hurns, you said, was 46. That's a wide receiver 4. Beasley's a wide receiver 5. And that's about right. I don't see this offense taking off. I guess the one thing that could happen, if the defense falls apart, they could be trailing a lot and then forced to throw the ball more often. Mm. I mean, we went over passing attempts for Eli Manning. If Dak has more than 520, things have gone completely wrong for the Cowboys.
Well, so
because they don't want to throw the ball 30 times a game.
That's exactly what I was just about to lead to. One of the things that can be very dangerous about target hunting in these Cowboys offenses, their hope is there's not that many. Last year, Dak threw the ball 490. That was up from what was a significantly better year in 2016, where he threw the ball just 459 times. That's what they're aiming for. They don't want Dak to throw that much. They'd rather, you know, him kind of make up some of that yardage in the run. Now, one of the things, if we're talking strictly Dak fantasy, his first two seasons, he's had 6 rushing touchdowns in both of those years, ran exactly 57 times both of those years. Last year was at 357 yards. First year was at 282. So if you get 6 rushing touchdowns and 300 yards on the ground for your quarterback, that is a really, really nice addition. But again, it's very difficult to hunt targets in an offense that is hoping to not have that many.
Dallas doesn't want to throw the ball. I mean, they want to run the ball. You said it perfectly. I mean, if they're throwing the ball more than 30 times a game, they're probably trailing. And things didn't go well at all. And by trailing, I don't mean by a point. I mean by more than a score, where they have to throw the ball to try and catch up. That's not the way this team is built. And the Cowboy defense is, you have a secondary has issues, but the front seven's good. You know, the front seven is actually pretty damn solid there for the Cowboys. And if they ever get Earl Thomas, this defense could actually be above average here. So it would make that team immensely better here. But this team is built around that offensive line and Ezekiel Elliott running the ball, controlling the clock. Dallas really wants to win games in the fourth quarter where they've worn you down. You know, they just worn that the defense down. Elliott's worn them down. The offensive line's worn them down, pounded on them for three quarters, and they can't stop anybody anymore. And Dallas can eat up the clock all they want and score, you know, either get the late score or whatever, or just kill off the game. That's what Dallas is hoping for here. You know, whether or not that actually happens, well, it's anyone's guess here. If you can't, like I said, if teams are going to put 8 men in the box because the passing game can't get anywhere, well, then that philosophy may not work. You know, Dallas' biggest issue by far is the passing game. I think it's more important than even the secondary problems they have, is that they just don't have anybody right now that's going to force defenses to play it straight. So they need someone to prove, or they need a game or two to make to prove that they can throw the ball. And that means Dak has to get better than he was last year, where he was not very good. It means Hearns has to play as the number one. Hearns has been a solid number two, but that also means he's faced number two cornerbacks. This year, it's number ones. Everywhere he goes, he's facing number ones. So can he do the same damage? I expect teams that have a good cornerback to go, pretty much go, hey, you're one-on-one with Hearns. We're going one-on-one across the board, 8 men in the box. We're going to stop Elliott. I mean, it'll give Dallas some chance to hit some big plays. It absolutely will, but they have to hit them.
Yeah, I think that is it is perfectly said. And this offensive line looks like it can be fantastic, but what are you meant to respect in terms of this receiving? I mean, it is abysmal. There's no sugarcoating it. It is really, really bad. The tight end situation has to be tied for one of the absolute worst in all of football. You mentioned it. Not even just casual viewers. People that watch a lot of football probably still might not know who their tight end is. And that's with fine reason. The receiving core, like, we can talk about Allen Hurns. Michael Gallup's still a third-round pick. I get, you know, we're back to getting excited about Cole Beasley. Are we really going to sell the Tavon Austin dream again? What a mess that can be. And it then does lead to this defense. George, I think for the last 4 years in a row, on paper, Dallas has been set up to have a bad defense. And it seems like every single time they have an average to sometimes above-average defense. Likely the biggest thing that saved this team last year was DeMarcus Lawrence. What an animal he was. Plays on the franchise tag. And really the only question I guess could be is, was it a fluke? I would lean towards no. So I do think that you make a really good point there is this front seven, as long as they're healthy, Jalen Smith, Sean Lee, adding Leighton Vander Esch, and as long as DeMarcus Lawrence continues somewhere around the region that he was last year, and they don't have the typical Dallas Cowboys suspension, that's a pretty good front seven.
It is. I mean, it is. They have some problems. I mean, Malik Collins is going to start the season on the PUP, or starting training on the PUP. David Irving suspended for the first four games. Again, he's actually a pretty good player in his own right. Tyron Crawford's banged up. Randy Gregory just got reinstated by the NFL. So they have some issues there. But it's a strong front seven. It truly, the problem is in the secondary. I mean, you got Xavier Woods and Jeff Heath at safety. That's not good. There's a reason they need Earl Thomas. They need him badly. They move Byron Jones back to cornerback. Maybe that works out. Maybe it doesn't. Chidobe Awuzie is the other cornerback. Jardon Lewis will be the backup there. So there's some secondary problems here. But, you know, it's things you can work around here. It is. So I think they'll be okay there. You mentioned teams may not want to throw anyway because, you said it, DeMarcus Lawrence still with the Cowboys. He's playing on the franchise tag again, so he has all the incentive in the world to have another big season so he can get that big payday next year. And I think the defense will be fine there. I truly do. I think the Cowboys are going to rue. Or I shouldn't say it. I'm going to try it a different way. I think how Dallas wanted to build this team, the draft said all you needed to know. They passed on Calvin Ridley. I mean, think about it. Dez was already gone. They got Witten had just announced his retirement, remember, right before the draft. Yeah. So they knew they needed offensive weapons. Calvin Ridley was a gift from God that he fell to them at their draft slot. And they passed on him. They passed on him for Leighton Vander Esch. Not that there's anything wrong with him. Maybe he's going to end up being a very good player. But, I mean, you got a gift from God in Ridley. You passed up on him for Leighton Vander Esch. I wonder if that's going to hurt them immensely, if really develops the player he might be. And Vander Esch, well, let's face it, may not come from a small school.
Questions there for Dallas. George mentioned something right there as we were just talking about the Cowboys. That does tie into some of the bigger news around the league. We'll talk about that next here on Fantasy Sports Today.